Welcome to the Botches Solo Pod. Yes, today's a solo with Gavin, aka Huckleberry, and we are going to do a little solo potting today. So the boys are out doing their Friendsgiving in Missouri and hanging out with Benji, and I am all alone because I am a broke bitch. So we're going to do a little solo pod, and I want to start off with some good news. There's a town called Kalkaska, Michigan that has recently shut down the idea of putting in a data center. They were proposing to put it on some public land, state-owned land in Kalkaska County. Man, they publicly flooded that talk and pretty much shot most of all of it down. So I'll read you the statement of what he ended up saying after the meeting went out, and he said, "We sought public input because we want to be partners with the community we live and work in, and we heard you. That's why the company and Kalkaska Go will end its pursuit of a data center," said Matt Ryan with Rock Locker LLC. "We are grateful that we have the opportunity to engage in public discourse. It is important to work together as a community when making decisions about the future, even when there is a disagreement." So that is that's great. So I'm ecstatic about that. The Kalkaska County, if you live in Michigan, has got some of the richest and most beautiful trails in Michigan, and it's got more than you could count. You could spend months up there just taking every little itty-bitty trail that you find, and they're all a little different. It's mostly sand, two tracks, but some of my favorite camp places in Michigan are down in Kalkaska along the Boardman River, or I can't remember what river it is now, of course. I want to say Manistee River, and I think it is, but it's just a beautiful, beautiful area, and a lot of wild, a lot of good driving, nothing really hard, just beautiful, right? Scenic. And they were looking to put these massive data center on public land, so not only would that have taken massive amounts of public land out of the consumers, campers, hunters, off-roaders, people that like to hike. And that was a well-known area, too, that they wanted to put it in. And thankfully, they listened, they backed off, but it would have taken a lot out of it. And data centers do a lot of harm to the environment anyway. It's disputed. I would say look up anything else for more than what I'm going to tell you, but they need a massive, massive amount of cold water to pour into these data centers to help with cooling these AI cooling fins or whatever. So they have to get that cold water from somewhere, and it has to go somewhere. So let's say, cool, they're not putting it in anything. It's just going in through some pipes to filter in and come out. Well, they have to pull that water from a river. It takes a massive amount of water, which pulls it out of the river. And then they have to either dump it back in, or it has to go somewhere else. So if they're not putting it back into the river, which I'd imagine they would, then that river, the water level is going to drop quite a bit. But let's say they do. It's going to be much hotter coming out. And anybody who fishes, anybody who knows, just basics about ecosystem knows that a couple temperature differences in the water constantly is going to change the ecosystem. You can't have fish going in through there, and there's a chance that it could damage the fishing, which is a beautiful spot to do it over there. So they were looking on about 1,440 acres, and it would include a gigawatt scale facility, devoted natural gas plant, as well as carbon capture and storage, and a closed loop water cooling system. So that a closed loop probably means it wouldn't be in feeding a whole lot. I'm not sure how that works. That might negate the whole water issue, but they still have to get that water. I doubt they're going to have it just shipped in. I don't know how that works though. But it looks like the Department of Natural Resources in July rejected Ryan's proposal to use the public land based on opposition from conservation groups, missing documentation, and misalignment with the agency's mission. 3 days before the Monday meeting, State Rep. Ken Borton from Gaylord posted a news article on Facebook about the Kalkaska proposal with the message, "Not on my watch." And the next day, it was Senator Michelle Huitenga, She said, last week I met directly with the Department of Natural Resources regarding this project and received assurances that the public hands will not be sold for data centers development. And then she posted on Facebook, further, the multitude of reasons I stand with the voices of the people in firm opposition to this project, I'm confident that our Northern Michigan communities can attract businesses that not only bolster our local economics, but also align more closely with our values, prioritizing the preservation of our land and way of life. So, great news. We're super happy about that. It even goes farther into this article that says, you know, it impacts the environment, such as local cold water streams like Boardman River that draw trout fishermen north each year. I'm just super happy about this. A lot of the times there's a few people that say, you know, it's going to happen. Cool. Let it happen, but let it happen somewhere where nobody lives, where there's no recreation at, which is, you know, pretty unusable for most people. So, I mean, and I get that's not the point, because they want it to be easy to use and stuff too, but, you know, in my world, I couldn't care less about AI. I really couldn't. So, I'd rather have my public land. I'd rather have places to go to get away from things like AI. So, putting a massive 1,400-acre AI facility in the middle of the woods where I typically go to camp is not my idea of, relocating it to, somewhere else that isn't commonly used for this kind of thing. I mean, people drive through that area. I mean, and you can hear it. So, you know, it's even there was an old man in that the meeting. He says, he's already forced to endure the constant noise from DTE Energy's compressor facility miles away from his home. He goes, this is where we all live. In the middle of the night, you can walk outside, you can hear that facility, and we're probably about 5 miles away as the crows fly from there. So my only concern is a bunch of lip service, he said. You're an educated man, and you seem like a nice guy, but I don't trust any of it. And you know what? he's not wrong. I mean, there is no reason to trust any of it. So I'm cool with this. Very happy. And I'm just looking through the rest of it. Yeah, Whitmer described the project as the largest one-time investment in state history, singling her strong support. And that project, let's see, that's pretty crazy. This is regarding something else, and I'll comment on this too. In Ouachita County's Saline Township, the Board of Trustees in September voted 4-1 against rezoning farmland to make way for a 575-acre data center proposed by Related Digital, a subsidiary of a billionaire mega donor Stephen Ross related companies. 2 days later, the township was hit with a lawsuit alleging exclusionary zoning, with a threat from Related Digital to pursue monetary damages. The township's attorney suggested a settlement offered the lesser of two evils, and the township ultimately reversed course with a deal that promised millions to schools, fire services, and land preservation and community projects. That project, which is championed by the Related Digital VP, Ryan Fredericks, husband of Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson. Yes. So, tell me that ain't some crock of shit right there. They went ahead with it, with one of the largest deals in Michigan, with the VP, Ryan Fredericks, the husband of the Secretary of State. Tell me there isn't something going on right there. It's now under review by 3 member of Michigan Public Service Commission appointed by Gretchen Whitmer. Whitmer described this, and this is what I was saying earlier, as the largest one-time investment in state history, signaling her strong support. Benson, in the meanwhile, is running her own election to replace Whitmer in 2026. So that's kind of fucking crazy. I'm not going to lie. And the proposals in Kalkaska and Saline Township are among the 10 different plans developers for hyperscale data centers currently under consideration across the state, which many strongly opposed by locals. You got to remember, this is a massive amount of water, and that's why they want to do it here. We have one of the biggest fresh water supplies in the country, and we have a great state for it. I can't lie when I say that, but it's gonna fuck us over, dude. We're gonna lose all that land. We're gonna lose our fresh water. They could say it's clean. They could say this and that, but we all know how that goes. It's all just like the one guy said earlier. It's all a bunch of lip service. Just gonna end up polluting more. We're industrializing all the nature that we fought so hard to keep. It's ridiculous. So that's all I'm gonna say about that. We really need to fight for our land, and we need to be active and engaging in these public discussions. And that public discussion was perfect example of that, right? We had most of the Kalkaska community show up and express their opposition for this, and they decided not to do it. I mean, everybody was fighting against it. There are people that say, you know, hey, I drive through that area. I camp there. I fish on the Boardman River next to where you want to put this. This is not, people don't want it. We want Kalkaska to stay wild, you know what I mean? And no, I'm not a native resident of Kalkaska by any means, but I did live in that area while I was in high school, so I'm pretty familiar with Kalkaska, Fife Lake, South Boardman, Grand Traverse area, and that's beautiful area, and it should remain how it is. You know, yes, you know, the towns like Kalkaska, you know, of course they should be able to grow a little, but these big projects here that are out in the middle of nowhere just to bring in money. I mean, I get it. It's a business plan. It gives the people more money, but I'm not about it. I would, like I said, I'd much rather keep the land. So we've already had issues with the mining to reopen. I think reopen mines in the UP, which is the Upper Peninsula of Michigan for anybody who isn't from Michigan. What is it? See, reopen mines, Upper Peninsula. I'm going to find this out here. Let's see. When was this? January 9, 2025. Michigan's $50 million copper mine deal looks hard to justify. All right. Let's see. Michigan's Economic Development Agency last March announced its plan to give $50 million in taxpayer money to the Canadian company that might build a copper mine in the Upper Peninsula. The subsidy to Toronto-based Highland Copper came with promises of $425 million in capital investment and 380 high-wage family-sustaining jobs in the Western Upper Peninsula. Hey, a lot of these people in Upper Peninsula already had this whole copper mine, high-wage, family-sustaining jobs. They already had this, you know, 100 years ago, you know, Norwegian and Swedish and Finnish and, you know, a lot of European settlers came over just to do these mining jobs. They lived in these mining towns. And then once the mines stripped the fucking, once these companies stripped the fucking mines out, they left all these fucking families to sit here and basically had nowhere to go. Not saying that they wanted to leave, but now we have massive, European towns, basically. I want to see Finland. Some Swedish stuff, like, you know, stuff around like that. And they're still very active and popular, but look, they've been through all that. They know how this goes. And so do we. They're going to come in there. They're going to strip everything out of it. And they're going to leave these towns barren to die out, which is what they've done. You could drive up the middle of the UP, and while it's gorgeous, you could see skeletons of towns, especially up by Copper Harbor area. You drive through intersections where you could see 100-year-old houses, old schoolhouses, old churches. These were all mining towns that were booming in the mining days. And then in the 60s, when they pulled everything out, around the 60s, when they pulled everything out, they left these fucking towns high and dry and with no source of income, all alone. And it's ridiculous. And doing this again, it's just a Band-Aid. And then they're going to take more natural resources. They're going to have to dump all of this. Mining is not a clean thing. We all know that. So it's not great. I mean, the project stalled last month, and this was done in January. So in the face of immense pushback from environmental groups and citizens, these concerns are likely overblown. Mining is already heavily regulated to minimize damage to the environment. A new mine would pose no more than all the other mines currently in operation. There's not a lot of mines currently in operation up there. Sorry. A lot of them now are up in the UP. A lot of those mines now are just tourist attractions to make some money for these small towns that don't have anything. So I don't know. They tried 10 years ago. They couldn't get it off the ground. And then copper prices, they plunged out. And, you know, it looks like we're going to lose it, man. I'm sad about it. Because that up there, I mean, Kalkaska is beautiful. But it's even more, it's like a whole different country up there, dude. It's gorgeous. And it's sad, you know. Let's see, you know, according to the report from Limitless Media, the copper wood mine would yield about 1.5% of usable copper from its operations, leaving behind 98.5% of extracted material as toxic waste. This would result in over 30 million tons of tailings, which is leftover materials produced by, during mining operations containing arsenic, mercury, and selenium, stored in a massive pond only 2 miles from Lake Superior, the world's largest freshwater lake. Limitless Media also reports that environmentalists are warning that Michigan already understaffed dam safety program might not be equipped to ensure the safety of such storage facility, especially during extreme weather events, with a tailings disposal facility taller than the Statue of Liberty planned near a sensitive ecosystems. Opponents fear an environmental disaster in the making. This is just ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous. So, Protect the Porkies, a group who's opposing the project, they point out that most of the copper is unlikely to stay in Michigan. And yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous, man. We're destroying it. And I could tell you right now, if they say there's a chance of it happening, guess what? It's going to happen eventually. I mean, you imagine that much arsenic like that. And dude, if you've ever been up there before, you've seen Gay Beach. That is a real beach. It's a funny name, but there's a real beach called Gay Beach. And it has all of that, what do they call it? Shillings? What is that? I can't even remember what they were calling it. Tailings. So they have a whole beach made out of tailings. And supposedly, they went through all of that and sifted out all the toxic waste. That was on the beach of Lake Superior. So they've already sustained a pretty big hit there, I'm sure, with arsenic. I mean, it's called Arsenic Beach. Gay Beach, I mean, it's all like this dark black rock. It's all just mining throwaway after they do all the extraction. So all that material got loaded up and thrown out there. So there's a massive fucking beach. And I mean, like, it's a whole beach shore just full of this stuff. And you could drive on it. It's horrible. So, like, we need more of this shit. And the fact that the tailings disposal facility is going to be taller than the Statue of Liberty. And that whole area up there is sensitive. It's wild. It's sensitive. It's a massive tourist attraction, too. It's just you're asking for a disaster. The weather there is so unpredictable, and you get so much snow that some people won't even be able to get to this place in the winter. Probably guaranteed. I mean, I would probably guarantee it that there's going to be days where you're not even going to be able to get there. So who's going to be maintaining this? You know, they're going to have to make a large road. They're going to have to keep it plowed. I mean, it's just the money that they want to throw into this just for a little bit of copper. But the amount of harm it's going to do to everyone else is just ridiculous. We're not doing that. I mean, we are probably. I mean, how many times did the small guys actually get a win? That's why I wanted to point out the Kalkaska thing. Because I don't know. I don't think it's going to work. Supporters of the copper mine, they tout the potential economic benefits for Geobic County, including 380 jobs. Woo! Paying $80,000 to $120,000 annually. That won't last long. It'll last about 20 years, maybe. President CEO of MEDC told reporters back in March that the project was critical to emboldening Michigan's supply chain and creating jobs across the state while supplying copper material essential to the mobility and clean tech industries. Blah, blah. I don't believe it. It's just more fucking lip smack. I really... I mean, look, it says the state projections show that the project could result in $15 million in annual state and municipal tax revenue. Additionally, the Lake Geovic Area Chamber of Commerce is supportive of the project, with the president, Mary Beth DiFrancio, saying, "We need something to come up and build up our economy." I don't know why the people that live in this area up by Eagle Mine, they'd understand that. I mean, there's an Eagle Mine in Marquette County. It employs fewer than 80 people. This is going to die out so quick and leave that community so scarred. It's not worth it, man. It's like throwing, pine wood on a fire. Anybody in my campers know. You throw pine on the fire, it's going to burn real hot for about 20 minutes, and then you're out. You need something that's going to bring slow, steady heat, like a hardwood. This is pine. It's going to come in. It's going to come fast. It's going to burn really hot, give you a lot of heat output for it, and it's not going to last. And then when it's gone, you have nothing there. When you burn all the pine around you, you have nothing left. So it's just ridiculous. And the fact that we're just giving away, we're letting this happen. I mean, I'm not saying we are, but it's just, we know. Everybody who lives in Michigan knows that it's not going to work. And it's so close to Lake Superior, too. And it's right in between, like a bunch of river systems. There's like six rivers on around this area. So it's in between a series of three rivers on each side of it that they want to put it in, where the mine is. And these three rivers on either side of this mine go straight into Lake Superior. So all of this mine runoff, all of like the arsenic, the stuff that gets pulled out, can potentially get into the rivers and this ecosystem and go right into Lake Superior. It's not only killing the fish, it's killing everything else that comes along the way of it. You could say, hey, it's going to be clean, it's going to be controlled. It never ends up turning clean and controlled. There's always a loose end. There's always someone trying to save money, cutting off people that are supposed to be doing a certain job, or not paying them enough so they don't do it right. And then we have toxic waste going into our rivers. It's just, leave it alone. Leave it alone. We're done. We don't want it. We don't. The only people that want it are the people making money off of it. Easy enough. Like, what else can we say? And guess whose voice doesn't count? Everyone's saying, well, oh yeah, yeah, everybody supports the idea of this. Nobody supports the idea of it. Not native Michigan, homeowners from that area. I highly, highly doubt that most of them, I would say 98% of them say no. Maybe the other 2% say yes, just so they have a job, because jobs are so scarce there. If you're not working a trade in that area, and I don't know if anybody who's lives in the city that doesn't understand this, in a small town, you have a handful of jobs to pick. You can work oil, you could be forestry, you can go out of town and move, sure. But in that town, you have the basics: farming, mechanic, diner, grocery store, gas station. I'm sure I'm forgetting a few, but construction, and then road crews, stuff like that. So you have there's a handful of jobs. You don't have factory jobs here and there. Like, a lot of these small towns don't have factories. You know, they're 40 some minutes away, and you can't afford the gas, let alone get there, easily in the winter. It's just not worth the pay. And then let's say you do travel to 45 minutes, you're getting paid $15 an hour to go work your factory job up there. It's not worth it. So, you're going to have a couple of those people that are going to be like, yeah, cool, if I don't have to go anywhere. And then there's a mine that opens up. It's going to give you who knows how much. You know, they say they're high paying jobs. I highly doubt that you're going to be making $80,000 as a miner. Maybe higher up. Yeah, sure. But I highly doubt it. I don't know. What do I know about mining? I don't know. I don't know what the typical miner makes, but I tell you what, if they're making $80,000 to $120,000 a year, I'll fucking move up there myself and do it. But I trust that about as much as I could trust a fucking throwing a dozer over the back of my shoulder. I don't believe it. I just don't. It's just not possible. And to think that it's all going to be clean and happy and they're not going to fucking completely destroy the environment by dozing all of this shit and making it all just one giant fucking cement slab is ridiculous. I don't believe it. So take what I say for a grain of salt, because I'm kind of ranting on this because I feel very strongly about Michigan. I love Michigan. I love the fresh water. Me, my son, my wife, we travel it often. We camp everywhere. And seeing that destroyed for a slab of land and 20 years of mining that's going to leave that whole area fucking destroyed. And then leave the residents after they leave even worse off than they probably are now. It's just not worth it. And it just irritates me that people think that it will. You know, like I said earlier with the data centers, you know, this industry's come and going. We have to grow with it, of course. But if you're telling me that there's no other place to do it than here, you're lying to yourself, right? You don't have to put it right here next to all of our freshwater supply, all what makes Michigan, Michigan. It's ridiculous. Any, like, lawmaker, anyone up big in Michigan who's always worried about the numbers, that's exactly why they shouldn't be in office, because if they're more worried about the numbers, which I get it, Michigan's business, but if they're more worried about the numbers than they are what makes Michigan, Michigan, then they lost whatever sense of community and patriotism for Michigan, I guess, that they had a long time ago. I mean, that's the issue, is that politicians forget where they come from and they start looking at dollar bills instead of the core of things, which is why we get millions and millions in tourism per year. You know, snowmobiles in the winter. We get massive amounts of tourism to the waterfalls, lighthouses, lakes, public state land, all around, for camping, for the off-roading, for the dirt bikes, for hiking. We have one of the most beautiful hiking up here. The shipwreck tours, Mackinac Island, you name it. We have a massive tourism, and that's what Michigan is about. We want people to see that Michigan is beautiful. We want people to come in and enjoy it and leave it without destroying it. And look, we all know that we've taken a hit from tourism in some ways. You know, people leave trash. It's never clean, and tourists are typically assholes, you know, but they are a massive amount of money. And at the end of the day, they're here because they want to appreciate what we have. So I'm okay with sharing that as long as we're responsible and respectful of the land. But I'm not okay with putting in giant data centers and giant mining, mining towns and destroying all this natural beauty that we use as for tourism and I guess locals use for various reasons as well. But I mean, that's hunting land. That's, you know, fishing land. It's camping. It's our land that they want to sell off to the highest bidder. It's a no-go. It's absolutely not. Shut that shit down. We are not talking about it. So 30 minutes in, I'm ranting about those two things. The mine thing, that's not new news. We knew about it. The data centers, there's like 8 data centers that want to be put in Michigan. We need to do our best to shut them down. Michigan doesn't need the money. You want money? Enhance our tourism budget. Let's work on the tourism. Let's get more people in. Let's clean these trails up. Let's work on that. Let's focus on the tourism, on the gorgeous views that we have. Let's work on that infrastructure. Let's put some money into the towns to make them more beautiful and to make them want it. I mean, there's some of these towns that are graveyards now. Let's throw some money at them. Yeah, I know. But listen, like, if we start rejuvenating some of these old towns, make them little holes in the wall, make them gorgeous, fix the roads, put some jobs back in there, like help fund the tourism, make these towns the places to be. There's so many little like, you go up to Marquette, to Grand Marias, I forget what the one the college is at up there, Houghton, Copper Harbor. You go to these towns, they're gorgeous, and they're tourist destinations. You know, Houghton's, you got a college there, so that's what it is, and it's got some mines. But it's beautiful, and it brings people to them. And when you drive down the streets and you see these giant old churches that are being worked on, and you know, it retains all that natural beauty from when they constructed them years ago from the mining days and when they had all that money. It's gorgeous, and it brings people to them. You know, I wanted to move there because I saw how beautiful that town was. Houghton. And these are, you know, Houghton, Grand Marais, Marquette. Those are all towns that I would move to in a heartbeat if I could. Just beautiful. Ontonagon with the Lake of the Clouds. It's just, these are all places I would move to in a heartbeat if I could. And what brought me to those towns were the, you know, the waterfalls and the things next to them. But what would keep me in those towns is the natural beauty that's there. We need to invest more into that. We need to invest more into the state beauty. We need to bring more people in. They don't, and there's a lot of people, like maybe Alex and Mark might are going to probably have a different opinion on this. Maybe they don't want anybody around. it, you know, usually when I have an opinion like this, they have the opposite. So I'm sure they don't support like the mining of the data centers and stuff, but maybe they don't want the extra tourism either. You know, maybe some of these towns want to stay small and they want to stay quaint, and I'm okay with that. I'm just saying that we should pour some money into them, give them a higher budget so they can make their towns better, right? So that local businesses aren't dropping like flies around Michigan. We need to give them better tax breaks. We need to do what we have to do to keep these businesses alive. For instance, I went to Sault Ste. Marie and there's a new business there. I think it was opened up a little over a year ago, and it's for making pasties. And they made the whole little business like this really homemade feeling. Like you go in there, it's like walking into your grandma's house, you know, in the 80s, 90s. It was absolutely gorgeous. And the food was delicious. The atmosphere was great. The owners talked to you straight there. And, you know, they just blew up recently because a guy went in just traveling around looking for beautiful places in Michigan. He traveled around and found that place and talked about it on his YouTube and said how beautiful it was. And boom, you know, the chicken ones were sold out. They only had beef left. And honestly, they said that they were going to be sold out pretty quick. And we were there on a Wednesday, so that wasn't even close to Friday yet. And everything they had gotten ready to pre-make had been sold out. We were lucky enough to get a beef and a spicy beef, and then a triple berry, which was absolutely stellar. And I think it's called the Pasty Company or something like that in Sault Ste. Marie. It's beautiful. It's homey. And like I said, the owners were just like they were on YouTube. And I saw him from YouTube. So he's the one that brought me to that place. And that's what we need, is we have all these travelers, all these people online, influencers and stuff. They travel out to these places. They get 50 million views. And they sold that company out. That company is probably running pretty good right now, positive. And they're going to probably be sitting pretty good in the winter, you know? So it's just one of those things where it's like we need to invest more into that, because when we have those people come in and they go, wow, this is gorgeous, this place is beautiful, it's going to bring more and more and more people in. And I want to share my land. You know, I don't want to give up some of my favorite camp spots, but I want to share the land that I think is beautiful. I want other people to see it. I want them to experience what I experience. And, you know, I'd rather that than a mine, you know? Why don't we just invest more money into that? How about we stop fixing the roads? Fuck the roads for a couple years, you know? Make them, they're just already fucking potholes anyway. Like, I've never seen our roads actually look great unless they were just paved and it's a, like a rural county road. So, yeah, that's the rant about that. So, protect our environment, protect our local interests. Let's bring tourism back heavy. Dude, Christmas used to be like the coolest town in the UP, and now there's nothing left. There's like a giant wooden Santa, and that's about all that's left there. It's sad. And that was within the last 20 years, because I remember going there as a kid, and it was a lot cooler. I mean, it's dying so quick. Soon these towns won't be able to sustain themselves. Everyone's going to move away. These towns are just going to turn into ghost towns. There'll be nothing there anymore, except the old-timers that talk about how good it was back in the day. That's what you have, is a lot of the old guys and stuff that talk about the mining in the 60s and 70s, you know, 60s when they pulled out or whatever. And then the 70s, the struggle, you know, it is what it is. I'm just saying, I think we should fight it. I think we should be changing how we view Michigan. You could use Detroit as a massive industrial complex. You can use Flint as a massive place for that, but leave the rural parts of it to build and beautify, extend tourism, throw money at it, man. Fuck it. I don't care what the budget is. Throw money at it. Our fucking Great Lakes need to look the way they make us feel, you know? So that's the fun, you know? That's the fun. So, you know, maybe we bring back, I don't know, start putting more reservations out for Native Americans, protect the land so they can't be taken. I don't know. Whatever we have to do to protect it. If that means I can't travel on it, but it's protected, fine. Whatever. I just want it protected. Yeah, I'd love to travel on it. I'd love to use it. I'd love to be on it and around it and blah, blah, blah. But it's disappearing, man, and we're going to lose it. just a matter of time. And we need to slow it down a little. AI is already crazy as it is, man. AI is nuts. So we're going to move on from there. We're going to talk a little bit about, my winter prep and what I'm doing right now, what my plans are. Personally, for me, my winter prep has already started. I've already taken out the big appliances out of my truck. Anything that takes a battery that charges, I have it pulled out, so I'm not draining or killing the battery. So the fridge is out. Most of my headlamps and stuff are out. I have my propane heater in there. My gloves, my cold weather gear is getting put in there. Muck boots, aluminum shovel, all that good stuff. I don't plan on needing it, but you never plan on it until you do, right? So, got that stuff on there. We're getting ready. We're supposed to get a storm here soon. We're just a couple days off from Thanksgiving. It's the 24th. So December's coming quick. So we're going to start getting some snow here and we got to be ready for it. Tires are great. I'm running Falcon Wild Peak, 83. Yeah. AT3s. They're great in the snow. They're good on ice. They're great in everything else. Aired down. They're even better, of course. So, I had them last year. This is my second winter with them and pretty confident that they're going to do well. And yeah, I'm excited to do some snow wheeling, man. I want powder. I want like 3 feet of powder to go snow wheeling through. Oh, I'm excited. So once we get that, I can actually do some trails and every trail is more fun when you got snow and stuff on it. So the only downside is you go through the trails that, you know, had like a shit ton of ruts and stuff before, and you want to make sure you don't fall into those ruts. When you get like a massive amount of snowfall, you can't tell where those ruts are. They, you know, everything looks shallower than it is. I did a trail out in White Cloud, which is about 40 some minutes away from me last year, and there was a good amount of snowfall. The trail didn't look too bad. Sienna's sleeping in the passenger seat. Jasper's playing in the back passenger, you know, in the back seat in the, and his, you know, his little baby seat or whatever. And I'm driving, she's sleeping. I'm like, okay, you know, this doesn't look bad. So I go into this side. And it was big and rutted. A whole fucking truck jumped down into it. As soon as I realized what happened, I hit the gas. And because I thought, you know, I didn't want to get stuck there. I didn't have a winch at that time. So I just gunned it, got out of it pretty easily. But, you know, it was not as deep as, thankfully, as it could have been. But it was deeper than I thought, and it jarred the truck around a good amount enough to wake everyone up. Oh, boy. I was hearing about that. You know, and that's the bad part of snow. You know, snow wheeling does hide some of the, you know, you get a nice fresh coat of ice in an area that's full of water, and then it snows on top of that ice. You can't necessarily see. You have to pay attention to the sides of the trail where it looks like it drops. So there are certain parts of the trail where it looks washed out. The sides of it, you could tell where the natural part of the land is. And then where it looks like it's been wore away from heavy use, you can kind of tell that parts of the trail. You could see ruts leading up to the area typically. So you want to keep an eye out for that stuff when you're snow wheeling. That's usually a good indicator that there's something there's something going on. And yeah, it sucks. I typically will go in, if I know that there's a hole there and there's ice covering it, I'll go into it slowly. I have a winch now. I can pull myself out if I need to. I'm not bombing a hole that some guy went into with, you know, 40s, 42s, and, you know, and just launched it through it. I'm not going to take my truck through 4 inches, 3 inches of snow, then 2 inches of ice, and then, you know, a foot of water. It's just not worth it for my truck, right? It's not. I want to keep driving it, you know? It's unnecessary shit to put it through. So, yeah, you got to watch out for that stuff. And hopefully when you're driving, you can kind of get a feel for it. But if you're new to snow driving and driving off-road in the snow, it's very different. You know, normal trails turn into hard trails. Not hard, but, you know, when you get everything iced up and you're going down a steep decline or incline, you know, and the whole thing's ice, makes it a lot harder when you have snow and it melted and you have like the slush, can't get traction. That's a thing too. I mean, like the best wheeling is powdered snow wheeling. That's great. You know, Yeah, we never get typically enough for you to sink your truck in just by driving, although that would be fun. But a lot of it's the slosh, the pits that you find. So it's good to look for those indicators, like I said, and to make sure that you're prepared. I mean, I did get stuck last winter trying to save someone in the Muskegon area, and I tried digging myself out. I didn't have a strong enough shovel for it. My plastic one broke. That's why I moved up to aluminum, and I'll eventually move up to steel. But now I have a winch, because I got a winch shortly after that happened, and I'm good now. You know, if I get in that situation, you know, I could just pull myself out. I know what I'm doing. So recovery is important. Watching out for other idiots. If you're recovering idiots that have gone off into the ditch, be careful. Look at risk management. If it's not worth it and it looks sketchy to you and you're not 100% confident that you can get them out, don't. I know it sucks. I know they probably think it sucks too, but, you know, I've heard a lot of horror stories about, you know, damaging these cars or damaging a bumper or something, these people coming after you, and you're liable because you pulled them out, you know, that, you know, and you don't have insurance, you don't have any of that, for that type of job. So you're liable for it. Thankfully I've never had that issue. I pulled a few people out, not a lot. But you know, it's one of those things that people that do it frequently, they talk about the fact that they just stopped doing it because unless they really needed it or, you know, they looked extremely safe as far as extremely safe goes, but like it looked safe to practice and do it, you know, they don't even do it anymore. A lot of the times, sometimes even the off-roader guys won't, you know, like the other off-roaders because they're worried about damage on theirs or the other people's vehicles. A lot of the times when we do like off-road rescues, it's a very, you know, it's unpaid. We're just doing it to be nice. So, and you know, me and Alex still do it. We went on a few last year and it's coming up again. I'm sure we'll be hitting a few couple this year. And so looking forward to that. It's just, we got to make sure we minimize risk to us, our vehicles and to their vehicles. And sometimes it's just not worth it. If the car looks like it's going to get damaged, if you can't get a good point to mount your stuff on, like you got the people that drive like Challengers. If I can't reach under your fucking car, I'm not going to try pulling you out. You know, if you don't have a very easy tow hook or a point to latch on for, I'm not doing it, man. I'm not risking, you know, getting sued for damaging your body on your car. And you could say, oh, I would never do that. Never do that. Well, wait till you get home and you think about it a little bit. We're not chancing it, right? So I'm excited about that. If you drive a car, I don't know why you're listening to this, but if you drive a car and it's two-wheel drive, well, you know, have fun. Practice in the parking lots. You should always practice in a parking lot. Find an old parking lot of a church or something that isn't being used and do some donuts in it when there's snow on the ground, when the ground is frozen. Learn how your car handles. Learn what it feels like when your car starts to go out of control. And then practice on making your car get back into that control, you know. There is a trick to doing it. You know, you don't ever want to push on the gas. You never want to slam on the brakes. You want to keep that traction. So slamming on the gas doesn't always help. Sometimes it breaks whatever traction you do have. Slamming on the brakes breaks traction for what you do have, and then you slide. So usually letting off the gas or gently tapping the brakes to kind of slow yourself down until your tires catch, and then just keeping your, you know, your wheel, your tires pointed on the area you want to go. So a lot of people overcompensate and it kind of leads them off the path. But just like if you're drifting or anything, and you'll learn that when you're in the parking lot, you want to steer your tire towards the area you want to go. And you can use that to, you know, the counter steer and to fix your issue. You never want to just slam on the brakes. And you know what? A lot of the times, and I've been in this too, where you're following behind a car and you don't pick a safe amount of distance to follow behind that car, and they slam on their brakes. A lot of the times I would have just went right into them. You know, that's why they make anti-lock brakes and stuff too. But like, so I mean, just be prepared. You know, if you can't stop fast enough and you know it, take the better path, right? So a lot of the times that means me going on the shoulder of the road. I've done it a few times. You know, my truck's big, it's heavy. You know, in snowstorms, you can't see very well. I had one guy that was on me in Nuevo, the town that I live near, and he was driving in front of me, had his flashers on, going 30 mile an hour. I was like, okay, cool. You know, I was following a little close to him because I was planning on passing him. because it was not worth going 30 mile an hour. It was okay. It was just heavy snow, and he just had shitty headlights. And he had his flashers on, so you couldn't really necessarily tell when he hit the brakes. And when he finally did, it was pretty much too late for me. And I swerved around him. Thankfully, I had enough time, and I didn't slam on my brakes. I just swerved onto the shoulder of the road. I kept my tires on the area that I wanted them to be, and I went around him. And you should practice that. Take it into the parking lots, practice it. Make sure you have weight in your truck. If your truck's really heavy in the front, really light in the back, put some weight in it, man. A lot of people throw like sandbags in there. They'll throw cat litter. And a cool little trick you can use is not only you can use that as weight. If you get stuck somewhere where it's like just icy, you know, like your driveway or something, where it's just ice and your tires are just kind of spinning, you can actually open those bags up and throw the contents on the ground. That's a lot of the times people will use like coarse sand, because you can use that sand to throw down on the ice and help you get traction to get out of there. Kitty litter works the same way, but I would use natural kitty litter. But, you know, it's just one of those tips and tricks. And, you know, Alex and Mark, they don't prep much for much of anything, really. They keep a lot in their vehicles, but they don't, they're not like a, you know, survivalist preppers. You know, they don't, you know, do that, which is completely fine. A lot of the times they have the resources and stuff to get them out of it. I like to over prepare for everything. I like to keep a way to make fire, to heat, to cook. I like a way to, you know, I have like to have a knife and stuff in there. I want to be able to survive on my own. If I ever got into an issue to where I couldn't get out, where we're broke down, I have a couple of MREs, like freeze-dried meals in the car. Water isn't going to be an issue if there's a shit ton of snow on the ground. I have all my warm weather stuff there, fire starters, you know, utensils and stuff to camp in. So, I mean, I have a good amount of stuff that is already there, you know, propane tank for the stove, which is also for the heater. So I like to be prepared just in case, you know, I want to be prepared just in case for someone else too. Right. So I have, you know, the air compressor, the winch, I have all my recovery gear in the truck. I have gloves and all that in the truck. If it comes to me rescuing someone else, or pulling someone else out of the ditch to make sure they can actually get home, I want to make sure that I'm prepared for myself and other people. That's why I have a bunch of extra tools too, for myself and other people. I can't tell you how many times, even this summer, that, you know, I ended up using my tools to help other people because they didn't have the tool they needed and I did. So, you know, usually it's just sockets or a grinder flat disc or, you know, something like that, but it helps. You know, I have wire connectors, bunch of different wires for electrical. So, you know, it's just good stuff to have. It's good to be prepared. Sure, you don't have to. A lot of the times you'll have service. A lot of times you can get help, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I want to be prepared just in case. I always want to be prepared for the worst that happens, and I'd love to just not need it. And a lot of the times that's the case. A lot of the times, you know, I did break down, but my alternator went out in the middle of winter once, and I was on the side of the road with nothing. I had my jump starter on, attached that to the truck, got it to a spot, had all my cold weather gear in there, all my tools in there, pulled the alternator out. My wife met me there. We went to the auto shop, came back, put it on. I got everything done right there. And I would have had to go back and forth to the house to do that, which was 40 minutes away. Thankfully, you know, I had everything I needed right there in the truck. So, just one of those things, you know, good to be prepared. So on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you guys for sticking through me. I guess snow preparedness wasn't really what I was going to go into, but just for snow wheeling and fun anyway. And then, you know, the environmental talks with the, you know, the state of Michigan and my state that I love and take pride in. So enjoy that rant. Hopefully you guys keep an eye out for anything else that happens. If something pops up, it's a big deal, you know, let me know, let the Botches crew know. You know, you can check my Instagram out, Huckleberry's Outdoor Adventures, or the Botches Instagram. Send us a message, say, hey, this is happening, let us talk about it, let us get it out there. And then, you know, we can talk to the groups that we're associated with. We have multiple groups in Michigan, large off-road outdoor groups that we're associated with. And then we're associated with some of the bigger overlands in the, overlanders in the country that talk about this stuff. Won't name names because we're associated. We're not close friends, were associated. And, you know, we could pass this around. It's something that needs to be brought into the public eye. It's just one of those things that, you know, we want to do our part and other people feel the same way as us. So, yeah, I mean, send us a message, let us know. If you have a request, if you want to be on and you want to be interviewed and you want to talk and chit chat with us, let us know. The winter's coming. We want to be able to get some people on here. We want to be able to chit chat with other people, talk about the rigs, the future. You know, pretty much all you have is a decent mic, a quiet area to record, and a decent internet connection, of course, too. And a rig helps, but plans work too. And just talk about it. If you're a company and you want to talk about an upcoming product or something you're excited for and you want to bring it to our attention and ask us how we feel, we can give you an honest opinion. If you want to send a product to us and have us test it and give you an honest opinion, let us know. We all wheel pretty frequently, you know, every weekend. We do some kind of driving. We do put some kind of work into it. So yeah, man, thanks for joining me on this hour-long solo pod, and we'll see you next time.